Blog Talk Radio.
To bring back author and playwright Greg Oppenheimer. He's going to talk about his show that's going to have a special performance for the Writers Guild for charity. And we're going to talk about Lucy and his dad and anything other adventures he might have had lately. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Sort of frantically preparing for this show on March 2nd.
It's so exciting that it's for the Actors Fund, right?
That's right. One of my favorite industry charities.
Yeah.
And we've got most of the original cast from my play, which played last year at the James Bridges Theater at UCLA. But we've also added Tony Award winner John Rubenstein is going to be playing William Frawley, who played Fred. And we've also got Phil Proctor of the famous Firesign Theater comedy troupe, who's been my idol since college. So it's going to be very exciting.
Cool. That's great. John Rubenstein, I always like him. He's amazing.
Yeah. And Sarah Drew from Grey's Anatomy will play Lucy, and Oscar Nunez from The Office, Oscar the accountant, is playing Desi. And if people have seen it, just know it's really a lot of laughs. So people should come.
It's
based on
the book about your dad, right?
It's based on my dad's memoir, which I finished after he passed away, Laughs, Luck, and Lucy, and. But there's more in it than that. It's the whole story about how I Love Lucy got on the air, which I basically wrote it because every 10 years or so they do a TV movie or something about Lucy and Desi, and they never get the story right. And these movies are always so grim. The story of how the show got on the air is a lot of very funny stuff. So I put all that into play because I think a show about I Love Lucy should be as funny as the show,
which is
a tall order.
I mean, I agree with that. I mean, and they were so amazing and they worked so hard. They should be respected.
Yeah. The tickets are at actorsfund.org/Lucy is the best way to get tickets. It sold out last summer, so please. People shouldn't wait. This one sells out.
And it's on March 2nd.
At 7 p.m. And we're going to have that's Desi's birthday. So we're going to have a Desi Arnaz birthday celebration afterwards.
How cool.
And, and this is a show I wrote with the input from Lucy Arnaz. Lucy and Desi's daughter, Lucy Arnaz, was my technical advisor on this project. So. This is how it really happened.
Cool. Yeah, well, Lucy has a career of her own. I think she's appearing in New York or something right now, right?
I don't know where she's right now, but she wanted to come on March 2nd, but unfortunately she's booked. She's going to be appearing. She just wrote to me and said, you know, oddly enough, that day she's going to be 90 miles from Cuba. She's going to be appearing in Key West. Doing her show.
Well, kind of appropriate.
Yeah. That's where she's spending her father's birthday.
Well, from his autobiography, he loved Florida, so that's not a that's pretty appropriate.
Yeah, that's where he got his start. He started cleaning canary cages in Miami.
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine Desi Arnaz cleaning canary cages? Even though he talks about it, it's still hard to believe.
Yeah. Well, he was a lot younger.
Well, he was a kid. Like 15, 16 or something?
I think so.
Yeah. But that's really cool. I follow Lucy Arnaz on Instagram. I think it's the Music Box in New York that she's at right now.
Uh-huh. That sounds right.
But I'm so upset that she won't be able to come. Well, I mean, she's got her own stuff, but that would be cool.
She just, I think today, yesterday they did the anniversary performance of They're Playing Our Song with Robert Klein and Lucy as a benefit for the Actors Fund.
That's super cool. That was a great play.
Yeah. Oh, I loved that. She was fantastic.
She is. I've always liked her. I've always admired her. She's a really talented lady. I don't know. It's funny because she was raised in Beverly Hills, but she does a great New Yorker.
Yeah. In fact, I've directed her in shows twice, and both times were on the East Coast. It was actually in Newark at the Old Time Radio Convention. I had her do a Ray Bradbury show called Mars is Heaven, which is from the Martian Chronicles, in which, Lawrence Luckinbill is her husband, and she played his mother. But it was all right because she was supposed to have died 35 years earlier, and she was the same age as when she died. So when she shows up, they're about the same age. She sang in that performance, and that was a lot of fun. I also directed them in the Bickersons. So the Bickersons one, which was a lot of fun as well.
That's funny. Ray Bradbury is one of my favorite writers, so I wish that was filmed. I'd love to have seen that. Especially with her playing Larry's mother, that must have been very weird.
it all seemed very natural at the time. I remember it was a live radio theater performance, and we had a lot of recorded sound effects, and they land on Mars. And as soon as the touchdown happened on Mars, the plane, lots of sounds, and special effects and things, the board blew out or something, and we had nothing. and so we had no more sound effects. So I jumped up on the stage and ran over to one of the actors, and I said, can you do a rooster crow? And I was trying to find out people who could just do orally the effects we had coming up, and then it was really very strange for them, but it was a lot of fun.
I had that happen once for one of my radio broadcasts. We were doing a radio play, and for some reason wasn't working. So I was like, okay, you be the cat, crinkle the paper, you do that. It's the only thing you can do.
Yeah. Well, what happened was when we got to the place where they're supposed to hear a rooster crow, that actor did it, and somebody else decided to be helpful, and they did it as well. So suddenly we had two roosters.
That's hilarious. Well, they were friends. They wanted to be together. That's all.
Yeah.
They were rooster buddies. So. You are. Is it weird to Did you have to restage it for the new theater? I mean, was it different from the other theater that you had it at?
Yes. Well, most of the work has been because it's a much smaller stage because it's a theater that's made for screening movies, and sometimes they have a few chairs with people on a panel or somebody being interviewed or something, but they don't really do live performances of shows on this very narrow stage. Well, not narrow, but it's not very deep. So I only have room for 5 microphones. I think there were 7 at LA Theater Works. And so instead of having a dedicated microphone when somebody's supposed to be on the other end of the phone, we have the the sound engineer will apply the EQ, the phone effect, on whatever, hopefully, whatever microphone the actor is at. So I had to choreograph the thing very carefully. And I couldn't have actors crossing the stage because there was not enough room. So I figured it out, I think. But it's going to be and we have one day to rehearse, you know, to that day. So we'll get there at 10 a.m. Sorry about that. We'll get there at 10 a.m. and then stay there till dinner time and have dinner and change into wardrobe and then do the show. So that's the only rehearsal. But it should be a lot of fun, and I get to direct it this time.
Oh, you're going to direct it?
Yeah.
That's cool. Are you excited?
I'm very excited. The week that we did it last time was one of my favorite experiences ever. There's nothing like sitting in an audience and listening to them laugh at lines you wrote.
Yeah. Yeah. It's different. It's really different than writing a novel. And just hearing people say your stuff and listening to the audience reaction. I think that's really cool. Are you going to be, is it going to be going anywhere else in the country?
I've got my fingers crossed, but nothing definite at this point.
Okay.
I'd like to see a tour, but it hasn't come together yet. So I'm still hoping.
I think your dad would be so proud of you.
He'd probably be very surprised since he, as the time he passed away, I was busy practicing as a lawyer. And gave all that up when the book was published. But this is a hell of a lot more fun. I've been writing songs too, but that hasn't seen the light of day yet. Nobody's heard my songs yet. So, but one of these days, my partner and I are going to record an album.
Have you gone to a small club and played some of your music?
I'm just the lyricist, and we've done it on a couple of venues, and they've gone over pretty well. But it's it's interesting. I never really thought about it, but you can sort of hand out, particularly jazz musicians, you can hand out sheet music to, here's the song, and they'll just play it. But giving a singer, you can't do the same thing with a singer. There's very few people in the music business who can sight read and sing a song, sight reading it. Because you have to say, okay, how are you going to phrase it and everything. It's not just okay, play this chord or whatever. They have to prepare, and so to get a singer to commit to prepare something is. It's tough, but I've been taking whatever opportunities I can get. But we're up to about 14 songs at this point that we're happy with. So we just have to pick a time and then record
That's cool.
it. Yeah.
And is it going to be like a regular record or CD, or is it going to be download?
It'll be a CD, but it'll be available on iTunes and downloads and all that.
The funny thing is that I find this really weird because I still have all my records. In fact, I just moved recently, and I was unpacking them to put them into my – I have this old stereo of my parents that we have in the apartment. So and it's kind of like a little space for records, so we put our records from the old days into it. And my brother and I over the holiday, we were at our local Barnes & Noble, and they have a record LP section again.
Oh, yeah, there's more. I think I heard a statistic. There's more vinyl being produced now than ever, which is sort of hard to believe.
I'm like, oh my God, it's back. I'm glad, to be honest. I never understood this idea that because we have CDs and tapes and all this stuff that we have to get rid of LPs, you know, the vinyl. I didn't understand. I still don't understand. You don't get rid of old books because new types of styles of binding comes around. Why get rid of old LP style? I just didn't get it.
Although I think now that most of the phonographs that you can buy have a USB cord that comes out of them. So you plug it into your computer and play it through whatever system you have on your computer.
That's interesting. I have one of the in storage. I had also my old turntable. So
yeah, I've still got mine. Techniques. I've got a Techniques turntable.
Yeah, I like vinyl. I think it sounds. I don't understand. Oh well, CD sound better. Not really. I thought vinyl sounded better.
Yeah, CDs have fewer scratches, but the sound, assuming you have an unscratched vinyl disc, is better. Which is why people are going back to it.
Yeah.
It's also nice to have something you can hold and you can't.
So that's what you can do. You can do it as a CD and like make a little limited thing of vinyl, and then you can give it out at like a club date. See, I got it all planned for you.
I'm not a performer, though, except stand up before my shows.
No, I'm not talking about you singing it. I'm just saying you could, like, once it's recorded, it's like a real recording that you're doing with the record, you could have, like, a little limited thing of vinyl. And so when they go on tour, you can, like, have a prize or something that people win a vinyl.
Right. It was interesting for the show, for my play, we had to come up with some music for Desi Arnaz's orchestra to play. And without clearing any music from anybody. Obviously, we're not going to use a real recording of Desi Arnaz and his orchestra. But even if we don't use the recording, if I recreated it, you know, somebody owns that song. So Doug Walter, who did all the music for the play, he and I worked out this bit of music that sounds like it's the Desi Arnaz orchestra playing, and it sounds like something that they would have played in the late 40s. And it came out very, really nice. So, you know, all of a sudden you think you're listening to Desi's orchestra, but you're not.
That is really cool. I love that. I have this weird question. Okay. You know, when Desi is playing his conga, why does he look up? Is that some kind of Cuban tradition that you look up? Like he's praying to God or something. I was wondering if he knew.
That was part of his performance. I mean, it's more exciting when he's looking up. If he's just looking down at his drum,
No, he's looking
I think
at
it
the
adds
sky, though. He's looking up at the ceiling. He's got his head straight back during part of the thing, especially when he's really going.
Yeah, but it's like he's getting into it, so he's getting inspiration from somewhere. You know, I think it's more exciting than if he was looking down at his drum the whole time, or looking around at the audience. He said they can't do that because he has to concentrate on what he's doing. So he lifts his head, but he's not really looking up there. He's just sort of, you know, his eyes aren't, I don't think, fully wide open. But I thought it was a very effective move on his part.
Yeah, I just always wondered. Recently I was watching an episode where I loved watching him perform, watching him do that when he's really into it. He's playing the hell out of his conga, and his head goes right back, and he's like really. I mean, I knew the part where he opened up his tie and stuff was part of the act that. To make it look, you know, that he's working really hard and stuff, which he was, but it'd be more dramatic. But the head thing, he never explained it, and I just was curious if he knew.
Well, he was a great performer. He was excited a lot of people when he was out there. And he had this great charisma and magnetism as well.
What was your, I mean, I know I asked you before, but when you were a little kid, what was your first impression of Desi? I know, I remember what Lucy was, but I don't think I asked you about Desi.
To be honest, I do not remember meeting Desi the first time I met him. I mean, I know I met him a couple of times because I met him on set and I was over at his house for an Easter party. But, you know, those things mostly, the party, the grown-ups stayed pretty much away from the kids. And the kids were also, there were a few of the adults there were sort of watching the kids, and there was a clown for us and everything, and I was with Lucy Arnaz and Keith Thibodeau, who played little Ricky, and my sister, and some, you know, Lucy's friends, and we just thought it was a great party. It was at their house in Beverly Hills, and they had a merry-go-round and a carousel. I mean, and a Ferris wheel, which was pretty uncommon at birthday parties. I really don't remember anything specifically about Desi other than, you know, when he was performing.
That is was an incredible block. Lucille Ball, Jimmy Stewart, Jack Benny, Gene Kelly, yeah, all living like within steps from each other. But
when my dad left the show in 1956, and Lucy and Desi threw my dad a farewell party at her home in Beverly Hills, and they had a tent. They erected a tent in the backyard, and they made so much noise because they put on a whole show for him. Jack Benny was coming home, and here's all the noise. He just sort of wandered over to see what's going on. And of course, my dad. So I have pictures of, you know, he came. He's there in his overcoat at the party and posing for pictures. But my dad knew him because my dad wrote for Jack Benny in the 30s.
That's amazing.
He famously gave Lucy a couple of tickets to the Jack Benny program when he was doing her radio show, so she could go to school and in terms of how to interact with the audience, because Benny was the master at that.
Her lessons. I remember that in the book. Yeah, that was cool. I loved watching the Jack Benny show when I was a kid. Well, I still watch it when I can, because I have
Benny,
some DVDs
Jack,
of it.
Jack Benny was the best in the business in terms of timing. He knew exactly how long to leave for the laugh and everything. And if you look at the Jack Benny radio scripts, particularly. Whenever there was a laugh line, the next line would be Benny's, even if it was just him saying, or really, just because he wanted to be the one to time, you know, how long to wait before coming in. And so he always gave himself that power, and because he was better than anybody else at that.
That's amazing. I remember watching and just being amazed by him just staring at the audience and you're laughing hysterically. I mean, he's not doing anything other than giving an expression and staring at you. This is the
right.
TV show, obviously. But how he did that, I don't think people today really can do that. The closest person was Johnny Carson, and that was because he worshipped him.
If people want to see something, a really funny bit from a Jack Benny program, you should go to my YouTube channel. It's under my name, Greg Oppenheimer, and look up, or you can probably just look up on YouTube, Jack and the Little Girl. This is Beverly Washburn, who was the little girl in Bold Yeller, comes up on stage supposedly to get an autograph during the Jack Benny show. And it's just, I think it's an absolutely hilarious bit.
Okay. I'll look that up. I loved him.
Yeah.
He was just amazing. One of my favorites. When I read that it was Jack that taught Lucy how to time and act before an audience, I thought, yeah, that works.
And then when the Vitamedjamin. It was either Vitamedjamin or the Hollywood at Last. I think it was Vitamedjamin. That aired and Jack had his next meeting with those writers and found out that none of them had seen it. And they'd all missed the show, missed out on Lucy. So he called over and arranged a screening for his writers to see that show because he thought it was one of the best things he'd ever seen on television.
No, I think it was Hollywood at Last because it was the cigarette bit with lighting up her nose.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he wanted them to see. I remember it in your book.
Yeah, yeah. So you see how long it's been since I read my book.
Well, I read it last year. I remember.
Okay.
Although that isn't that long ago. We're on February 12th.
I know all the parts that go up through as far as my play lag goes, but my play doesn't go up till the fifth season, so.
I don't know. I don't read my book, so I don't blame you. I mean, I do if I'm going to do something with them, like when I put it on audio. I reread it before I did that.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, really, yeah, because I wanted to check on stuff. But
when I did my audiobook, I had you know who Larry Dobkin is or was.
Mhm.
He read my audiobook. He was the narrator for my audiobook, and he does a great impression of Bill Frawley and Desi Arnaz and everybody. So he's really, and he knew and he had to stop a number of times when he was reading it, you know, doing the recording it, because he'd sort of break into tears because he was friends with all these people. You know, he knew everybody he was talking about and everybody was doing an impression of it. He knew them all very well.
Gosh.
But he did a marvelous
touching.
Job. Yeah.
How sweet is that? Oh. I mean, that just touches my heart. Oh.
And he was on Lucy's, you know, three times. He was the guy, the counterfeiter in Paris who gives
everybody
the counterfeit
painting.
Money. Hmm? The money.
The one,
no, he's
with
not
the fake painting and the money.
Yeah, but the painter was somebody else. He was the one who offered her change or something or change her dollars into francs on the street. And I think he was in two other ones, too. But he was just a terrific, terrific guy.
I think that's wonderful. Now I have to listen to your audiobook. I was like, somebody asked me why I didn't do my memoir. And I was like, because I can't separate, it's my life. I can't separate it. And so I had someone, I actually auditioned a lot of people because I wanted it close to my voice, but I can't do my own life. I can do other characters, but I can't do myself.
You can do your voice.
Well, of course I know my own voice. But what I did was I just basically tried to get someone as close to me, to my voice, Californian. You know how hard it is to get a Californian voice actor to do audiobook? Everybody's from New York or somewhere else.
Oh, really? Everybody on ACX?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how I did it, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people from other places, but very few Californians. And I go, I'm a native. I need a Californian.
So when Larry did this audiobook, and it was for a big audiobook company, and then eventually 10 years went by, and the contract was up, and I got the rights back. And so I wanted to put it on through ACX, you know, Audible and iTunes and all that. And but it was an abridged version of the book because this audiobook publisher just wanted the Isle of Lucy related parts, including the radio stuff, but any things that had some relation to Lucille Ball. And it was called Lucy Behind the Scenes or something. And so they said, Amazon and Audible and ACX, they said, no, we don't do abridged. It's got to be unabridged. But it had a different title. It wasn't Laughs, Luck, and Lucy. It was published under a different title. So I just took the script, and I made a Kindle book, and I gave it that title, and I self-published it. And then I went back to them, and I said, I have an audio book. And they said, is it unabridged? I said, absolutely unabridged. Every word's there. And so
that was clever. Wow. That's a good idea.
So the script of the audiobook sells for 99 cents because I don't care. I just put that up just because I wanted the audiobook published.
Oh, wow. So can people get that on Audible, or can they still get it?
Yeah.
Is it still available?
Yeah, it's called I Love Lucy, The Untold Story. And it's got the script of the play, of the first version of first act of my play, the first version of it, and the audiobook has Larry Dobkin reading the audiobook and then the performance of the first version of my play, which was I had a bunch of people, you know, like playing to various parts. Dick Van Patten played William S. Paley. And who played? Larry Dobkin wasn't in it, but we had some really good. Oh, Phil Proctor was in it. I think Phil Proctor played Desi. And
really?
Walter Winchell. Amy Peets from Caroline in the City played Lucy, and Shirley Mitchell from I Love Lucy played the operator, a telephone operator, and Dan Kahn, who's the editor of I Love Lucy, who was one of the original film editors, but played the director of the pilot. And you know, and we did it at the motion picture home in Woodland Hills. That was
a
lot of fun.
Oh, that's
a great
place
anyway,
to do it.
So that's part of the audiobook.
That the motion picture home is a really great charity, by the way, for anybody. That's part of where the Actors Fund goes, is the motion picture home.
All the royalties on the audiobook, if people get the audiobook, all the royalties on that, 100% of them go to the Motion Picture Television Fund, which is the motion picture home. But it covers motion picture and TV and the whole entertainment industry now.
I can't remember what William Campbell. He was at a event I was at, and if you bought his picture or anything, all the money because he was the head of the at the time of the home, and everything you bought, autographs, anything, went to the motion picture home. And then he would I was talking to him. I was telling him how much I admired that, and he gave me an invite to the home, and I was like, I still have the letter.
Did you go?
Oh yeah. Yeah, my mom, my dad, my brother and I, we all went.
You know where they got the money to buy all that property in Woodland Hills?
I'm trying.
They started,
it was like movie star, wasn't it?
They started in 1939. They started a radio show called the Screen Guild Show, which my dad was head writer on. And all the payments, they had every big star in the industry come on. And the first one, I think the first show, was written by my dad and Sam Perrin, who was one of Jack Benny's writers at the time. And it had Jack Benny, Joan Crawford, Judy Garland, George Murphy was the host, Reginald Gardner, I can't remember else who else was on it, but it was, you know, an all-star thing. And all the actors came on it, got the usual fees for coming on, but all that money went to the Motion Picture Fund. And it was on for 10 or 12 years. And in that period, they raised enough money in that way to buy all that property in Woodland Hills.
Wow. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's an incredibly beautiful place. I used to work very close to there, so I actually went there a couple more times later on. It's gorgeous.
I've done three shows.
That's a wonderful, beautiful place. It's a retirement place for people. You have to work so many hours in the industry in order to be able to retire there. And they take care of people.
Yeah, because there are so many people in the entertainment industry who don't make the big bucks. They work, you know, just part of the year. I mean, you know, like the when it comes to retire, they got nothing. So, but this, if you can get into motion picture and television, a home it's a really nice place.
And it's a full facility. I mean, whatever your issues as you got older was, they'll take care of you. It's an amazing thing that they do. I don't know who runs it now, but it was when I went, it was beautifully run. It's just a gorgeous facility, and you never knew who you would run into when you were going through.
Yeah.
The first time I saw people, I know that one. I know that one. I didn't say it out loud and I didn't point, but that's what I kept. I know her. Yeah. I know him.
One of the people who was in my show was Connie Sawyer. She played Hubble Robinson's secretary. Connie at the time was 98 and she lived at the home. I think when she died, she was the oldest living Screen Actors Guild member, because she was in the original True Grit. She was in, you know, Frank Sinatra and The Hole in the Head, and she was doing stand up. She's the only person I knew who, but she was still working. She drove around to all her own auditions, and she was the only actress I ever knew who had a resume that included both the Colgate Comedy Hour, with Milton Berle from the 1951, and How I Met Your Mother and The Office. She
Isn't
played.
That amazing.
She played.
What was the name of that old gentleman who was in everything? I mean, he started.
Charles Lane.
Yes, he was. He lived in the home, and they would send a car for him to be in the Bob Newhart show or whatever to the home, pick him up, bring him over.
I went. Charlie was a good friend because. He and my dad were close, you know, from very early years. Actually, he went to the same high school as my dad. he was in every one of those films with, you know, like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and It's a Wonderful Life and. You just see him all over the place, but I went to his 100th birthday party, and he was on the SAG Awards, I think, when he was 100, and he stood up and he said, you know, and if anybody's interested, I'm still available. He was a regular on Lucy. A lot of people know him from Petticoat Junction. He was the guy who owned the railroad. But he was on the Lucy show later. I think he was first the banker before Gail Gordon took over. But he was a wonderful actor.
He was very, very funny. Very good. I liked him.
Yeah.
That was one of the people I saw at the home was when I went there was him.
Well, you were there a while ago.
Oh, yeah. This was way back.
Yeah.
I won't tell you how long, but it was a long time ago.
I need to plug my play again.
Oh, yeah, we're going to. Okay, so I Love Lucy, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Sitcom, will be on March 2nd at the Writers Guild for the Actors Fund in Beverly Hills. And if you want to get your tickets, it's actorsfund.org/Lucy. How's that?
Mm-hmm. That's perfect.
Do you have a website you want to give everybody for yourself so people can say hi?
You can just go to my Facebook page.
Okay. Is it just under Greg Oppenheimer, or is there
It's just under Greg Oppenheimer. It's a Facebook profile. It's not really a
Facebook
page.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a business.
Oh, I know, but people put their pages up too. I thought that's what you meant, that you made a page.
I keep meaning
so
to.
Easy.
I know. But I have.
You might have
if they
you
want
might
to
consider
cut.
It.
Maybe I will. Right now, I'm concentrating on writing songs.
Okay.
Can
I have you on the show when you do your record?
Sure. I hope that's soon. My partner who writes the music, he's tours all over the world. He's a world renowned tenor sax player, and we have to nail him down where he's in the States and has had time to put a recording session together.
Okay, so did I forget anything about the show that you wanted to make sure that you get across?
It's very funny.
That is obvious. It's about Lucy and Desi and William.
You've heard it, right? You've heard it, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah, I heard it on the other one that you did when it was available on audio.
Yeah, which it still is, by the way.
It's still available on audio, right?
Yes, but it's a much nicer experience to be in the theater live and watching perform it. That is the case.
The LA Theater Works. That's the audio that I heard.
Yeah, you can download it at latw.org.
Yes,
search under
and I
Island
loved
Lucy
it.
There.
And I think I told you I did, didn't I?
Yes, yes. Just
I thought
not on
I
the
did.
Air.
Okay, on the air. I think it's hilarious. I loved it. I actually rewound so I could hear different parts over and over again because they were so funny. It's great. And see the play. If you can't see the play, listen to the audio because it's worth it. How's that? It's the truth, too.
Okay. Cut and print.
That's my commercial for you.
Okay.
No, but really, it's really funny. I'm kidding, but it's hilarious. And really, really, if you can, if you're in the LA area, I can definitely recommend it. And I didn't hear John Rubenstein, so that is really amazing, and I would love to hear him.
He was supposed to actually be in the first version that we did at in 2011 at the Motion Picture Home, but then he got a show, The Grumpy Old Men with John Shuck, and so he couldn't make it. So now I finally get to use him.
Cool. Well, we're coming to the end. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope it's a super success and you make oodles and oodles for the fund. I mean, it's a very worthy cause.
Thank you. I hope so, too.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting. Thank you. Thank you for coming. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.